Good evening, everyone. This is John W. Vanderkirk speaking for Alka-Seltzer, bringing you the news of the world. On our tour of some of the primary news sources this evening, we expect to hear from the Pacific round about Bikini, from Washington, and my own commentary from the NBC newsroom in New York. But first, here is a brief message from Tom Moore.
When your work gets you down and you come home troubled with a headache, as maybe you did today, why, of course, that's the time to reach for that package of friendly Alka-Seltzer. It can be just the thing for occasional headache because it offers relief that's both fast and effective. But what happens when you go to your medicine cabinet and find that Alka-Seltzer bottle empty? When you don't feel like running an errand to the drugstore for some more? Well, if you've remembered to buy that extra package of Alka-Seltzer, you're all set to enjoy that relief after all. Yes, remember, when you go to your drugstore, get an extra package of Alka-Seltzer. Buy two instead of one for an extra package on the side. Keeps a home well supplied. Now, John W. Vanderkirk and News of the World.
As the Senate toils and moils toward final passage of its, critics say, the gravely weakened OPA extension bill, it's become official that Chester Bowles is anxious to quit a job he feels Congress has deprived him of the authority to carry out successfully. The British government has been compelled at last to ration bread and flour. That gloomy announcement was made today in Parliament. The new rationing rule goes into effect in about 3 weeks. Adults will be allowed to buy 9 ounces of bread a day, manual workers rather more. That amount may seem fairly adequate to many Americans. It must be judged, of course, in relation to other foods available in British markets. A startling indication of how meager those supplies are was given today by a simultaneous announcement the meat ration will be slightly raised. Britons, henceforth, will be allowed to buy 28 cents worth of meat a week, instead of only 24 cents worth as at present. When one remembers that butcher shop prices in the United Kingdom are almost as high as they are here, one gathers the traditional British occupation of beef eating has long since become only a dim historic memory. The foreign ministers in Paris today, and this is news indeed, agreed. All four discovered they were of like mind about the separation from Italy and attachment to France of two small valley regions inconspicuously tucked away in the Maritime Alps. Far more importantly, the representatives of the great powers reached a final, all-round, satisfactory decision about the final disposition of the 12 islands, therefore called the Dodecanese, which lie off the coast of Asiatic Turkey at the entrance to the Aegean Sea. Just to make it harder, there are really 13 islands in the Dodecanese, but never mind about that. Though those sunny, rather barren islands have belonged successively to Turkey and to Italy, their populations largely Greek. As a result of the understanding now reached in Paris, the group, Rhodes is the biggest and most important, will be given to Greece. The only string attached to their transfer is the sensible requirement that those historic ancient bits of land, some were on the itinerary of that granddaddy of all tourists, Ulysses, must be demilitarized. Fortifications and big gun emplacements built by the Italians during their period of occupancy will be destroyed, and not even the Greeks themselves will be allowed to build new ones. That arrangement relieves the Russians of their natural fear the British, through their close association with Greece, might someday install themselves in an area which could threaten the uncomfortably roundabout Russian exit from the Black to the Mediterranean Sea. The bigger headache, what to do about Trieste, a question which arises after each war with the inevitability of white crosses, hasn't been cured. But everyone's feeling better. Agreement between allies, even in peacetime, it's been discovered, is possible. There's a dreamy hopefulness. It might just conceivably become a habit. Speaking of agreement and its opposite, that stalwart champion of the principle of majority rule, Dr. Evatt of Australia, is reported planning to reopen the whole question of the veto when the General Assembly of the United Nations convenes next September. The veto power was conceived of at San Francisco as a kind of atomic bomb, a rare and deadly weapon to be used only, if at all, in a time of great emergency. Lately, reaching a climax at the Security Council session yesterday, the Soviet delegate has been employing the veto power as casually as if it were a pea shooter. The debate, if it comes off, will be interesting. But as the world-minded Australian statesman well knows, it's a grossly misleading fallacy to think, as many do seem to think, that Russia alone among the big nations sets a high value on the right of saying no. That, by the way, is one of the many things the Russians have been smarting over. That smugly virtuous misstatement, the veto right on the UN Council, is peculiarly a Soviet pet and a communist invention. It isn't. Anyone who doubts it has only to ask himself just how long the Senate, would string along with the United Nations if our United Nations delegate did not have the right to veto any collective action which might seem hostile to the United States. And now for reports from the Bikini area, we switch you to NBC in San Francisco.
For the latest news from NBC staff reporters covering the atom bomb tests, we take you now to the USS Mount McKinley.
This is Ralph Howard Peterson speaking from Bikini. In Bikini Lagoon, the tension is growing as the big day approaches. The only way to describe the flagship Mount McKinley is to say that she is an orderly madhouse. Secretary of the Navy James Forrestal arrives tomorrow, and his arrival is the cause of a lot of doubling in brass aboard the ship. Admirals and generals, Army colonels and Navy captains, heretofore secure in spacious private staterooms, are now sharing the same quarters. On the Mount McKinley, the unification of the services has really arrived. This ship has a wartime complement of 60 officers, but at the moment, there are more than 200 officers aboard, and about half of them wear oak leaves, eagles, or stars. Meanwhile, a twin-engine ticket boat has been freshly painted and laid aside for the Secretary of Navy. The Mount McKinley has been restocked with food, and a new supply of fresh water has been pumped into her tanks. Over and above these bustling preparations are the last-minute details that always pop up in a gigantic operation such as Operation Crossroads. An almost constant line of staff personnel is coming up or going down the gangways, and the small boats waiting for their respective officers resemble a regatta as they mill and churn about the lagoon. I talked with the weatherman this morning. It's Friday morning here, and he had good news. For the past week, a semi-static tropical front of rain and heavy clouds has been hanging around the Kwajalein area. Its slow progress has been toward Bikini. However, the weatherman says the tropical front is breaking up. Today is slightly overcast, but tomorrow should bring better weather, and we hope it continues. A day depends upon the weather, and every man realizes that if the atomic bomb is not dropped on July 1st because of bad weather conditions, it will mean just so many more days of Bikini's heat and humidity. Now to W.W. Chapin on Kwajalein.
This is W.W. Chapin on the Army radio ship Spindle Eye in the lagoon of Kwajalein Island. This tiny coral island is being invaded today by an imposing army of brains sent here to evaluate the atom bomb burst. Admirals, generals, lawmakers, scientists, observers from foreign lands all began pouring in by sea and air about an hour ago. The top layer of the VIPs, very important people, like General Stilwell, Lieutenant General Brereton, and Vice Admiral Hoover, and Dr. Carl Crimpton, members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Evaluation Board and President Truman's Evaluation Commission, they all came by air on the steamers Appalachian, Panamint, and Blue Ridge, now at anchor in our Blue Lagoon. On those are 150 reporters, Bikini-bound, as well as more scientists, VIPs, and a whole array of foreign observers and reporters from the 11 nations represented on the UN Atom Committee, including two Russian observers and a Russian reporter. Those men from countries from which we withhold our atom secret may pass today within a few feet of the Bikini bomb, but they will never see it nor even know they were so close. The hiding place of that awesome bomb with which we have lived as nervous co-tenants of this island for 10 days, that's the deepest, darkest secret of our tropic isle. In honor of today's arriving VIPs, the island commander polished his domain up to the last minute. Fresh paint everywhere, and even the rusty jeeps assigned to transport the VIPs are dressed up with white slipcovers. The whole audience for the atom burst is now in the theater. And despite the rain and clouds of the past week, the weather outlook is good for running the big show on schedule 3 days from now. This is W.W. Chapin on Kwajalein, switching you to the NBC newsroom in Washington.
This is Morgan Beatty in the Senate Radio Gallery in our nation's capital, where Pass the Biscuits Pappy O'Daniel has set out to talk OPA to death by Monday morning, if only some kind senator will protect him from the wolves. And they're here in force, those wolves, even if they can't be seen on the floor. They're in the cloakrooms, in the dining room, all over the Senate wing of the Capitol, ready at the slightest opportunity to rush in with a parliamentary left if O'Daniel drops his guard. On the other side, there are a couple of senators out there on the floor with debating material piled high on their desks, almost as high as the 3-foot stack in front of O'Daniel. They're debating with themselves whether to join him in the filibuster. If they should, he's got a chance. If they don't, he has started the forlorn filibuster of our times. His voice is already cracking, despite his radio experience. He takes swigs of water all too frequently, and for a well-trained filibusterer, he's eating entirely too many cough drops. He looks like Billy Conn from the gallery. He's already lost the floor once on a technicality. It was restored to him through the senatorial courtesy of Majority Leader Alvin Barkley. He can lose it again and still talk if he's got the breath. Senators may take 2 speeches in one day on any one subject. But hanging over the senator from Texas is the notice of the majority leader that the Senate is now in continuous session night and day until it passes or rejects the compromise OPA bill, the one already passed by the House. The first threat to the measure disappeared in mid-afternoon. Senator Robert Taft of Ohio supported the compromise. He said he was convinced that the bill now before the Senate was a vote of no confidence in Chester Bowles, and he hoped Mr. Bowles would resign, as he has threatened to do privately. He thought the Secretary of Agriculture, Mr. Anderson, would shortly decontrol beef, at least, and possibly pork and dairy products within the life of the law, that is, before next summer. That convinced most of the Republican minority. They decided to go along, which ordinarily would mean the bill should pass. But Thomas of Oklahoma has that pile of material in front of him, so for that matter has Wherry of Nebraska. O'Daniel is out there now, still reading telegrams from indignant Americans. Here's one, he says, from Texas, and he goes on. And here are a few samples of those messages. We're for you, Pappy. Give them the works, and God bless you. Give them blank, blank, blank. Fight for freedom, Pappy. Give us liberty or give us death. You'll go down in history. Just then, the senator decided he had already went down in history, as he put it. But no, this was a new message. He'd go right down in history again. And that's what's happening in Washington tonight.
Only 6 more days before the big 4th of July weekend. Be sure you buy that extra package of Alka-Seltzer now and take it along with you wherever you go. And listen to this little scene.
What are we doing over the 4th, dear?
Oh, I don't know. Stay home, I guess.
Oh, now, please, don't be like that. We can get all the gas we want, and the car's still in pretty good shape.
Yeah, but think of the crowds on the highway. You know a lot of driving sometimes gives me a headache, and on our last trip, you got acid indigestion.
All right, then. We'll get an extra package of Alka-Seltzer and keep that handy in the car.
That's the right idea. And it's something for all you folks listening to keep in mind. Keep an extra package of Alka-Seltzer in your car. Then if a headache or acid indigestion should happen along and threaten to spoil your fun, you'll be prepared to enjoy the pleasant welcome relief Alka-Seltzer can give, even though you may be miles from a drugstore. Yes, when you go to your drugstore, buy 2 packages of Alka-Seltzer. One for your car and one to have at hand on home. Keep an extra package in the car. Then when you need it, there you are. Now back to John W. Vandercook.
Hamburg. Among those who know Germany best, there's been speculation for some time as to just how soon the adherents of Adolf Hitler would begin openly to say, in effect, "You can't do this to us." Today, the crowd courage to protest against an action of the occupation forces has been found in Hamburg. 4,000 citizens of Hamburg, or Hamburgers, today gathered by prearrangement and forced their way into an open square in the center of that ruined city. Despite the efforts of the mayor, one of the city's few honest anti-Nazis, and of British and German police, the demonstration lasted for 2 hours. The manifestation was thoroughly German. It gave clear evidence of the almost total unreconstruction of the local German mind. The specific cause of the complaint was to resist further evacuation of local families to make room for British occupants. But the first cause was soon forgotten. Soon there were shouted references to the iniquitous Allied bombing of Hamburg, not to be compared, of course, to the bombing of London. The mob twice sang Deutschland über alles, Germany over all, and shouted its disapproval of the anti-fascist Bürgermeister. And that's the news of the world. This is John W. Vandercook speaking for Alka-Seltzer. Till this same time tomorrow, goodbye from the newsroom in New York.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.